It is time for Pet Files. Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine. 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. With us today, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief vet at the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Hello, Dr. Cannon.
Good morning, Jill Goodman. You sound like you have a hairball.
She does.
I'm about to.
I've got a cure for that.
It's too late. It's already.
And the worst, the absolute worst, is when you know it's going to happen, because then the mental thing goes with the physical thing. And
nothing worse than a hairball on Valentine's Day.
In the middle of a show where you actually have to speak. Happy Valentine's Day, Dr. Cannon.
Same to you.
All right. Ellie in Phoenicia. My wife and I are moving to Nevada this summer. We have a puppy, a two-month-old golden lab. Just curious if there's anything a dog owner should know before relocating cross-country as far as diseases, vaccines, etc.
So Nevada is sort of in the desert, and the good news is that I'm sure in that part of the country there's less heartworm disease and less Lyme disease. So that's the good news. It doesn't mean that you don't need to be careful of it, but we have so much Lyme and tick-borne diseases out here that ticks don't live as well in the desert. So the only thing that comes to mind really is, and I have seen two dogs in my career with this out here who have moved here from that region, Arizona and Nevada, or Nevada. I don't know how it's pronounced by people who live there. It's called Valley Fever, and it's a fungal disease. So it's actually caused by a fungus called coccidiomycosis, or Coccidioides imidus, I think is the name of it. But in any case, the disease is coccidiomycosis, and they call it Valley Fever, and it's usually affecting the lungs. So the spores are in the soil, and when the soil is disturbed, then you can, apparently it's quite common in people out there too, but you can inhale these fungal spores, and they can form little
sporettes.
Whatever, yes. I'm not sure what they're called, but they're like almost like spore cysts in the lungs. And some dogs are fine with it and never show symptoms, is my understanding, but it can become systemic. And so I have sort of done follow-up on a couple of dogs who've been treated for that in the area. They can become very sick. Usually they don't die with it, but it's something to be aware of and read about.
How does it present?
Well, I believe probably with coughing,
okay.
And with maybe with fever when it's first starting. You know, if you've got a really good immune system, most of these things don't affect you.
Right.
But if your immune system is not perfect, if very young dogs or the older, then you're at risk. Can you avoid it? I don't have any idea. I guess I would definitely check in whenever you move. Check in with local veterinarian and make sure that you. Check out also the things that can be out there that even in your direct area, sometimes there are certain diseases and things to watch for, like particular plant-ons in California that get stuck in eyeballs and in noses, et cetera.
Right.
So good idea to check in with somebody, have your record sent, and word of mouth is a great way to find a good vet.
I was just going to say, you know, find someone who you know or who you know has a beloved fur person in their life, and then get the name of their vet. And you can always pre-ask. And the other thing that I was just going to say is, if it's February and even if it's this summer, your puppy's going to be a little bit older and therefore a little bit more hardy.
Right.
So that having gone on an adventure with an 8-week-old puppy, I am always a little my ears always get pointy like Mr. Spock when I see something like that. All right, Mark in Litchfield. Does a young and healthy animal really need a checkup? Why don't they ask me these questions? It seems like every few months I'm getting a postcard in the mail from my vet's office saying it's time yet again for my perfectly healthy 2-year-old spayed Shiba Inu to have another checkup. No offense, but it seems like kind of a racket, considering that when they get their booster shots, they get their basic vitals checked anyway, which is all that happens during a routine checkup, right? Mark in Litchfield. All right. You're much more diplomatic. Go ahead.
Well, having a so a young dog, typically, once they're past puppyhood, then typically they're seen once a year, unless things are spread out quite a bit, which sometimes is a good thing if you're getting a lot of vaccinations. For instance, if it's required for you to have the influenza vaccine because of potential exposure and Bordetella vaccine, and you're getting the Lyme vaccine and the leptospirosis vaccine too, because your dog is out and about quite a bit, then you know you may be going more than once. But the yearly physical, if you think about it on a young dog, is really the equivalent of bringing your child to the doctor every 6 or 7 years. So, you know, I don't know that anyone would do that, would wait that long because they're life expectancy, because they age so much quicker, you know. And the checking the vitals is, if that's all your veterinarian's doing, then find a new vet. So you should be getting a complete physical exam, comprehensive exam. You know, and your dog may look perfectly healthy, but there are all kinds of congenital problems, not to use scare tactics, but really just to make sure that you're doing what you should be doing. It's educational as well as informational as far as the physical status of your pet. So heart murmurs, cardiac arrhythmias, cataracts, oral health is huge, learning how to keep your dog's teeth in good shape, making sure that the, even when they're puppies, making sure that the adult teeth come in.
That was really diplomatic, and this is your show. And I am just going to say something about that question, which is, here's the thing, and here's the tricky bit, and I'm old, so I can say this. Your young and healthy animal that looks young and healthy to you, which is fantastic, and you will know, because the difference between a healthy and a sick animal is abundantly clear. However, what you see from your young and healthy animal as an owner is in the same ballpark. It's not even in the same freaking state as what a veterinarian will see. So the short answer is, no, Mark, take your dog to the vet once a year. If you're getting all of those reminders because the booster shots were spread out wisely, okay, you know, that's going to stop. Or you can organize that, talk to your vet. But as far as a yearly physical, it's not negotiable.
Yeah, at least. And then when they get to be older, we try to get people to come twice a year because it's so important. You know, it's like a...
Before you were born, we had to go every, I think, it was every 6 months. It was twice a year, and that was actually considered protocol. And then I remember on a totally different topic, if you didn't have to get shots, I mean, this was before titers, this was... If you didn't have to get shots, then people wouldn't necessarily go. So it was just better to put them on a routine where they needed the shots so that people would go. Because really, there is absolutely nothing more demoralizing than walking into a vet's office with your, you know, too late to do anything useful about it. Situation, and that's
and it's oftentimes it is teeth, and oftentimes then there may be a murmur that hasn't been addressed, and then you've got potentially endocarditis, which is, you know,
terrible.
Lots of bacteria from those teeth that are seeded out on the heart valves, and so all of that needs to be it's a educational experience, and really looking for things that you can do something about before they become life-threatening.
Right. And I think someone in the background was endorsing that.
That's right.
All right. Nicole in Danbury, me and my wife adopted a Frenchie over Christmas. Oh, speaking of fur babies, our fur baby is 1.5 years old. She seems healthy, but her breathing gets raspy when she's running around. Plus, she snores loud. We've met a lot of smush-faced dogs that snore, but my wife is a little concerned. How can you tell when it's just being a smushy-faced pup and when it's a problem?
You can tell by taking your dog to your vet and have them checked out. So what we've done is bred dogs with, you know, normal length noses and bred them to have pushed in or very short noses. So the muscular part of the nose, the bony part of the nose is short. The palate and all of the soft tissue is still the same. So the genes obviously aren't linked. So what has happened is you have all of this soft tissue in this tiny little space. And also linked to that, it's called, it's more common in the bulldog to have this be a major issue, but it's called brachycephalic syndrome. And so brachycephalic means short muzzle. The syndrome includes very small openings to the nostrils. It's called stenotic nares. So some dogs will have that. Other dogs have the elongation of the soft palate. So the palate in the back of the throat, there's all this extra tissue, and it's pushed back. Then you've got folds and folds of mucosa or lining in there that are all in the back of the throat. And some dogs even have a hypoplastic or small trachea. So the airway is smaller than usual. And those dogs can have all kinds of problems breathing as they get older because the inflammation back there is huge because there's just no room. Everything's rubbing against each other. And all of the everything your dog breathes in gets collected in those folds and causes inflammation. And you look in the back of the throat, you can't even see the tonsils most of the time. And if the tonsils are there, they get inflamed. If you can see them, then they're huge. They're all inflamed. They're everted out of the saccules. The larynx then can collapse from the difficulty of breathing in. So, you know, there's a whole syndrome here that's leading to poor breathing. I can say in the Frenchie, it's usually not as much of a problem, but some of them have very small openings to the nostrils and need to have surgery because if they're exercising and having trouble breathing when they're exercising, then that increased pressure, air pressure, when they're trying to breathe in can cause some problems with the back of the throat area, like a collapsed larynx. So it's something to have checked out.
All right, and we've done certain things to the bodies of dogs, you know, for a breed standard for show dogs that don't necessarily work that well for their lives.
Right. I mean, they can be. The wonderful thing is they also seem to have bred this wonderful personality into them. You know, they're just so friendly and very cute.
Oh, they're just so jaunty.
The problem is the nose is adorable, but there's all that the same amount of tissue in there in a very small space. So it's things that have to be addressed, and those dogs who have stenotic nares should not be bred, in my opinion.
Right. All right. So yes, take your fur baby to the doctor. All right, Ade and North Adams. I've noticed lately that my 3-year-old Corgi Rat Terrier mix Bradley sometimes trips over his own front legs when he's running up a flight of stairs. To be fair, he does that sometimes when he's running fast, too. Is there ever such a thing as a clumsy dog, or does tripping mean his front legs are weak in some way?
That's very hard to say. It could be either. Some dogs, usually it's the long-legged dogs who are somewhat clumsy. They never really figure out where their back ends are. Usually it's a hind-end problem, not a front-end problem. So it may be that, you know, especially with the Corgi, there may be some elbow problem there. And if Bradley can't flex his elbows very well because he's got some arthritis even at 3 years old, that could be a reason for tripping. It could be also that he has maybe a chiropractic problem, depending on whether he's been doing it. I don't remember if this was it said that he was doing it all the time?
No,
or
she's
forever?
Noticed it lately. Sometimes he trips when he's running fast. So,
yeah. So that isn't, you know, they can be clumsy, absolutely, and you can work on that with a rehabilitation person, or even some of the trainers will work on proprioception and do different exercises, et cetera, that you can do to help develop that. But you want to make sure first that there isn't a musculoskeletal issue.
And we have, I ask this frequently, but what is the best way to find a good chiropractor? Or a good
AVCA.org.
Okay.
No, it's not. It's not. It's the animalchiropractic.org is
okay.
To find a certified veterinary chiropractor.
In your area?
Right.
All right. And I was trying to find a bank in my area, and I wasn't happy with the bank located. It was just bizarre. So I guess, and then word of mouth is another way, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You definitely want to go to... It, so it depends on the state. you can see a veterinarian who's a chiropractor or who's taken chiropractic courses, or you can see a chiropractor who's gone through the veterinary chiropractic course. I don't recommend, although chiropractors are amazing, I don't recommend going to one who hasn't learned about the anatomy and the different issues that dogs have. So yeah. There are chiropractors who will work on dogs, and it's not what I would recommend.
Okay.
And it's not legal.
And other than that, it's, I'll say this, you're not allowed to. It's as you point out, it's a different anatomy, and we are sort of so inclined to treat our pets at this juncture as though they're little, you know, children with an odd shape and two more legs.
It's
actually,
and it's very specific to the anatomy. The adjustments are very specific to the anatomy. So if you don't know I would never presume to adjust a human because I don't know the anatomy, you know, like the back of my hand. So I think that going to a veterinary chiropractor is a great idea with a dog who, if your regular veterinarian can't find any problems, then doing an adjustment's a great idea for a dog who's tripping.
Great. Javier in Albany, while the polar vortex was happening, my roommate started feeding the squirrels off our fire escape. The thing is, he decided to use my dishes to do it. Yeah, it's awesome sharing an apartment. Anyway, is just regular washing with soap and water enough to get squirrel germs off my plates, or do I have to throw them out?
Now I have to know about squirrel germs. I don't know. I would say that I certainly wouldn't use them unless they went through a dishwasher, and that's my personal decision.
Right.
So I don't know specifically about squirrel germs, but put them through your neighbor's dishwasher. Don't throw them away.
Okay. All right, Tanya in Millerton, I just got my first cat ever. She's 5, fixed, and female. Nigella is a Persian, and a lady at the shelter told me you shouldn't let a Persian cat get fat. I'm wondering, how can you tell under all that fur? Is there some kind of rule of thumb you can do by just looking or feeling? Do I have to put her on a scale? If so, how the heck do you weigh a cat, and how often would you do that?
So, no cat should ever get fat, but I love that the lady at the shelter is telling this about Persian cats or whatever, so that's great. So you should be able to feel your cat's ribs. You should be able to feel your cat's ribs, but they shouldn't be protruding. You should be able to feel your cat's backbone, but it shouldn't be protruding through the skin, so it shouldn't be prominent, those spinous processes of the spine. And you should be able to see that your cat has, when you put your hands on, even with a lot of hair, when you put your hands on your cat, to make sure that there's a little bit of a waist there. So many cats that I see, they, especially a large cat, they look like they're an okay weight, and then I go to palpate abdomen, and they have a huge amount of abdominal fat, which, of course, we know for people is really unhealthy as far as cancer goes. And we know the same thing, really, for animals. So we assume the same thing for animals, and it has been shown in dogs like the Golden Retriever, right? So if you can't decide, then you can go to your veterinarian. You might even be able to weigh your cat regularly, sort of in between or at lunchtime when they're not having office hours. You might be able to have a technician help you and tell you whether your cat is overweight or not. Most cats are. So err on the side of caution as far as feeding goes. Is that helpful at all?
Yeah, very helpful. The only thing that I would say is if you don't know what it's supposed to feel like, then you're not going to know what it feels like.
True. It can be a little tricky, though, with a cat with that much hair.
So maybe
absolutely.
What I
so
would
you
say,
may need to get help.
Right. And so what I would say is just you find your local vet and go in and say, help, I just need to know what this feel like. Because, in fact, having a not fat cat is going to make you a much happier and it's going to make you a wonderful cat owner.
And what we do at my practice is I give people a target weight. So if you bring your cat in and your cat weighs 12 pounds, I say, okay, this is what she should weigh. And then you're welcome to bring her back. Now, it's not always fun and happy to bring a cat to the vet, But of course, that's another that's a day for another discussion as far as fear goes. But weighing them at the veterinary office, or just finding, you can get one of those baby scales to weigh them on. You make it comfortable with a towel or something, maybe a soft fleece on top, and zero it out and weigh your cat on a baby scale. I don't know how much they cost. I don't think that they're astronomical. But that is one way to check it out. You can also, if you've got a fairly good scale yourself and your cat is supposed to weigh 9 pounds, you know, you can hold your cat over the scale after you weigh yourself. And at least you're going to know within the pound whether you're doing okay with feeding.
Okay. All right, and we've got time for one more question? I'm told we've got, yeah, we do. All right. Our beagle Freddy is 7, and in the past few months, he started to lose hair on his sides. The skin where the hair fell out looks darker than it used to be and kind of papery, too. My husband says it's just Freddy getting older, but it looks weird to me. What do you think? Janine in Poughkeepsie.
So bilateral hair loss, especially with what we call hyperpigmentation, so if the skin looks darker, it's pigmented, typically is a hormonal problem. There can be, we're looking at potentially thyroid disease or Cushing's disease, which is an adrenal gland problem. There's something also called alopecia X, which is poorly understood, but usually happens in the Nordic breed. So we see it mostly in the Pomeranian, actually. And that is a whole different story. Actually, it may actually be somewhat hormonal, but it is more difficult to treat. So definitely have that checked out, because it usually is an indicator of a deeper problem, not just a skin issue.
And are there successful herbals for, or not herbals, but are there complementary therapies for these diseases?
Definitely, yeah.
Okay.
So there's Chinese medical herbs and acupuncture for Cushing's disease. You know, Cushing's disease is always a little iffy. Do we treat it? Don't we treat it? It comes with other symptoms. And so you're sort of usually treating the symptoms, unless there's actually adrenal tumor, which is very unusual. Thyroid disease is easily treated. There can be other hormonal imbalances, though, too, that can cause that. And I have had luck with the alopecia X, treating it with, sometimes we treat with melatonin. I've actually used some deer antler that's on the market for arthritis, and had some luck with the hair growing back in.
Wow.
So, yeah, there are lots of things that can be tried.
Deer antler, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, you know what? We're out of questions, so I hope we're out of time. This has been Pet Files, Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com.